Hello and welcome to a special edition of the By The Min MFC podcast. Tonight your usual trio are delighted to welcome Welsh Society Chairman Brian McCafferty. Brian, firstly thanks very much for joining us. A very, very busy few days for you, I would expect. Is everything beginning to settle down slightly?
Well, first of all, Andy, I'd like to say thanks very much for giving me the opportunity to share a lot of things with you and the fans. It's been a long time since we've been able to do the sort of things that we're planning to do. Yes, all sorts of things are happening, and it's not quite complete. It's not complete until the fat lady sings, as they say. So whatever questions people have, I'm happy, more than happy to share anything that I know. But there's just some things of a legal nature that I can't answer. So I hope guys will understand that.
Yeah, absolutely. Brian, we've had a number of questions, some very good ones as well, through various platforms. The first one I'll go to is Stuart Kerr, who submitted a question via Facebook. I'll read it out exactly as it was. Congratulations to Brian on his appointment as the chairman and clinching a deal that keeps the ambition of fan ownership alive. I welcome the arrival of Les Hutchinson and the apparent shake-up that will follow. Since the inception of the society, Motherwell fans have been asked by the board and society to dig deeper and deeper to preserve the short-term competitiveness and long-term future of the club. During this time, our core support has fell significantly. I've never known Fir Park to be so empty. Do the club and society accept that the dwindling interest in Motherwell FC, despite the relative success on field, is partially due to the perpetual nature and negative outlook portrayed by the club? As an example of that is Europe being a financial burden, actively publicising that we must sell a player each year, punching it above our weight rhetoric, season ticket hike to cover poor cup performances, and winning these fans back via positive engagement. Is this a top priority for sustainable fan ownership?
That's a long question, Andy, but let me start.
I know, I'm away for a lie down.
The first thing is that I'm not the chairman. I am acting chairman. And one of the first things that we need to do is to sort out who the chairman is. So we need an election on that. And I'll ask Tom Feely to organise that very soon. The other thing is, thanks very much for the comments about clinching the deal. I have to say that the deal is not yet complete. We're at a very, very mature stage of the process, but we're still a little bit to go. And therefore, we will report on progress as soon as we know the next stage. In terms of asking the board and or the society to dig deeper. That's part of the mission. Our purpose, as you know, is to acquire fan ownership, and that's our ultimate goal. But in the process, we use the capital reserves that we have to help the club during times when there's a cash flow problem, which we've done several times now. I mean, last year we gave them £230,000, and only recently we've just given them another £100,000. The other bit of the question is about the club and society and the dwindling interest. I'm not quite sure about that, but certainly, as far as the club is concerned, since the new general manager took over, we've had a closer and closer relationship with the club. And now that I'm on the board and Graham Bartigal is on the board, I have to say that to begin with, it was just a new thing for me, and I wasn't able to make as much of a contribution as I would have liked. But now that our feet are under the table, and we're working closely with Alan, we're trying very hard to work out the sort of things that we need to do to encourage fans to come. And I have to say, where I'm sitting in the stand and I watch the boys every day singing their hearts out and waving the flags, it's a real treat, and it almost, very seriously, it almost brings a tear to your eye. And all the directors of the other clubs, they think it's fantastic. So we know that there's a will to attend the matches. We're working on ways in which to try and attract more. It's a difficult one, but we're going to try and incentivize people. For example, you know, if you bring a friend or a member of the family, you might get some sort of reward. We don't know, but we are concerned about the fall in attendances, and we're trying to rectify that together with the club. And I have to say, you know, finally on this question, when Alan returns from his course in how to run a football club, we're going to work very, very closely indeed, and coming up with a cunning plan to improve things. I hope that answers the question.
No, absolutely. It was a very, very long one. It felt a long one reading it out, I must say, but I think that's a very acceptable answer. What I'll do is, Jay, I believe that you've got a question that you want to ask yourself, and I'll just leave the floor open to you to ask it.
Yeah, cheers. Firstly, I just want to say thanks to Brian for coming on. My question is about communication, something I've been quite critical regarding the Welsh society since I joined. So if you're going to be critical about the communication, you obviously need to acknowledge when the communication's good. So having the acting chairman of the Welsh society on the podcast is an example of that. So thanks very much for that. I joined the Welsh society right at the beginning at one of the first sign-up evenings. And so since then, you know, I've obviously been able to sort of form my own opinions on the way the society sort of treats me as a member and goes about their business. And I found the communication to be, you know, basically incredibly poor. In fact, at times I kind of need to remind myself that I am actually a member. So that's quite frustrating and disappointing, because at times it does perhaps feel like because I've paid my 300 quid, I'm maybe not really, you know, required anymore. You know, I've served my function, if you like. Similarly with non-members, I get the impression when I'm talking to friends and family who haven't yet joined that they maybe rarely seem to notice the society's actually there, which kind of suggests to me that there's maybe been a sort of build it and they will come type of mentality from the start, whether that's the club or those involved in the society at the start. But the idea that the mere existence of the Welsh society will ensure new members rather than actively going out and trying to encourage people to join. So I was just wondering, firstly, what Brian's thoughts were on the level of communication from the start up until now, and whether he thinks I'm being harsh or anything along those lines. And I'd also like to know if there are plans to improve the communication going forward and what forms that communication would take.
Okay, hands up, yes. We have failed in our aim to communicate. It's one of our key aims to liaise with the fans. And yes, you're absolutely right. We haven't done enough. And we certainly plan to make that better. I mean, today is an example of my being in the position of talking to guys on the podcast. I want to do more than that. And can I just explain some of the things by way of background to do with the communications? Remember, and I'll mention too about the recruitment. Remember, we are all volunteers, and we have allocated roles, responsibilities, tasks for individuals on the board, and it's not always possible for everybody to complete those tasks for one reason or another. It's not that we hadn't planned to do it. It was in the action plan, and the action plan was updated several times, and yet we didn't do it. So let me just explain what it is that we've been doing quite recently. We have another volunteer to help us with this who knows quite a lot about communication and media and so on. And since that person has got involved, he's been involved in Twitter communication and Facebook messages probably on a, well, I wouldn't say daily basis, but probably every other day, if not every other day. Online forums, he's been communicating with supporters and asking questions on the fans forums. That wasn't done until last few months, and I know that that's maybe not as much as it could have been, but that's what's happening now. The website was established perhaps late in the day. Not perhaps, it was late in the day. It wasn't functioning as well as we had hoped. So that's been improved, I think, considerably, and we plan to improve even more. We plan, along with Alan Burrows, to look at the Motherwell website and see how far and to what extent we can get the Motherwell site sitting alongside the Welsh Society, because the Welsh Society will have a very significant contribution, part to play once the deal that we're talking about is complete. So we'll be involved more and more in lots of things that we haven't been involved in the past. So communication is really one of the key things that we plan to improve. Of course, we do have meetings as well, and mostly recently is to appoint new board members. And the last meeting I thought was a bit frustrating for everybody, because we were just almost at the stage of getting through the almost final stage of the loan arrangement, and folks turned up to hear all about it. But all I could say was there was a confidentiality agreement, which was very frustrating for me as well. So what we've got on the stocks is to we've prepared a video, and it's a promotional video about the Welsh Society and its goals, and appealing for folk to get involved. And that's not just to ask people for money, because we still need money no matter what, but also to recruit fans who haven't yet joined, but also try and develop the international dimension as well. And I know somebody was asking about that. We want to engage more and more with the fans. We started off planning for a fans forum, but that didn't happen, as I say, because people just didn't have the opportunity or the time to do it. But we certainly will once we get our feet well under the table. We want closer and closer links with the club, so that it appears that we are one and the same thing. As far as recruitment is concerned, we had a project which we called Kickstart last year to try and promote recruitment levels. We had limited success, but we emailed hundreds and hundreds of people as part of the survey results. We telephoned hundreds of people. We advertised in the match day program. We did all sorts of things through the website appeal, and we sent newsletters to everybody, not only to appeal for new members, but also to try and provide information about what was going on. And I do understand that, Jay, if you felt that you weren't getting enough information, it wasn't from the want of trying. I have to say, our resources are very limited indeed. We had Alison Wallace, who was helping us out from time to time, but she could only allocate the time that she had when it was the club who was our employer, so they had first go at what needed to be done. When she left, we had Katie McCrossan for a wee while. We've got a couple of interns from West of Scotland University to help us. We haven't had anybody helping us admin-wise for several weeks now. So one of the first things we need to do in the new year is to employ somebody as an administrator or even as a manager, because we know that folk are frustrated by the lack of communication. And that's really one of our top priorities, as well as returning to the telephone campaign, the video campaign, the email campaign, and any other campaign that we can think of to try and recruit more members and involve more fans.
Well, thanks very much for that, Brian. I said last week in the podcast that I kind of see the developments with Les Hutchison as a sort of a clean slate, if you like, an excuse to sort of sort of forget my previous criticisms and sort of start from scratch. So it's obviously really encouraging to hear you, you know, acknowledge just how big a deal the communication issue is. So thanks very much for that.
Cheers.
Brian, one thing that I was wondering about prior to you coming on was the fact that the board is made up of volunteers. Given that Motherwell are a Scottish Premiership club with a very ambitious one at that, is there a risk that the demands require full-time employees on this board rather than volunteers? I don't want to single anyone out, of course, but I know there has already been board members had to move aside temporarily due to work commitments, and that's perfectly understandable, but it's just a concern that people are always going to have to put their families first and their own livelihoods. Is this not a job that perhaps requires full-time paid employees?
That's a good question, Andy. I don't know the answer to that, because if you think of the club, the directors there are all part-time volunteers. It's only Alan who's the full-time manager, obviously with other staff members who run the day-to-day work of the club. We don't have a day-to-day work for the society. I gave up my work 2 years ago when I became a member of the society board, and I have to say that I spend probably too much time on this, but because I enjoy it and I know that it's worthwhile and it's worth the fight to achieve the goal, because my family would kill me if I didn't do it, it's a difficult one, because families come first. Despite everybody's, you know, love for the club, as I said before to Jay, maybe we need to employ someone who can handle things better on a day-to-day basis. Maybe not full-time, but certainly on a part-time basis, so that we can rely on an individual to do the work for the society in a similar way, perhaps, as Alan does the work for the club.
Yeah, I absolutely don't want to knock anyone involved and the work of Alison Wallace, Katie McCross and anyone else that has given up time out with their own jobs. It's fantastic dedication. But just your point on club members of staff being moved on to the society to work on it, then being moved away because they've been sidetracked elsewhere. That's just a wee bit frustrating to hear, that perhaps in the past the club haven't viewed the society as important enough to have a dedicated member of staff on the case.
Well, I think, to be fair to Alison, she works her socks off when she was working for the club and the society. I mean, it really was two jobs. And we were really, really sorry to see Alison leave the society work. And we wish her every success in her new role. Same with Katie. And she was extremely good in helping us. But the fact is that the club was unable, perhaps, to provide the resources, because resources are very limited. The staffing at the club is very, very tight indeed. So everybody has to pull together. And I have to say, in the time that I've been with the club, I'm absolutely impressed totally with the dedication and the time that people spend doing the work for the club. I mean, it's a labour of love for them. And, you know, the likes of Alan works, I don't know, he must work 23 hours a day, an hour of sleep at night. He's there all the time.
I think it's 25 hours a day, actually.
I mean, Alan Marshall's another one who looks after the stadium. They all work their socks off. So I wouldn't complain at all about anybody who's given us support, because it's always been 100%. But what I'm saying is that, looking ahead, and because of what you say, the importance of what we're doing, we really need somebody else other than the arrangements that have been with us so far. And it's not just volunteers, it's somebody who can perhaps be a person who has the skills and the experience and the track record that we need to do the job.
Can I just ask you, Brian, as well? You've mentioned Alan, general manager, a few times, and how well you know you got on with him, how much he's doing for you. Was there not a problem, but was it a bit more difficult before he stepped into that role?
I think it's fair to say that Alan has made a big difference to the way in which we liaise with the club. Before it was fine. It wasn't any problem. It's just, I think, improved since Alan took over.
No, thanks. As I say, we all know Alan. We know he's a big Motherwell fan. So
yeah,
it's just interesting you hear to say that. I just wonder.
We'll move on to the next question. Colin Fox, I think we've already touched on this a wee bit, but he's wanting to kind of how the society plan in enticing and retaining international members. I think there has been a, and I know it's not your own department, but there was a wee bit of disappointment from quite a lot of people abroad that they used to be able to tune in to MFC TV and hear live commentary of every Motherwell game. That was one of the perks initially in joining up for the Welsh Society. It's now been taken away and moved on to the YouTube channel, and I don't believe that actually includes commentary of every Motherwell game, which is obviously a big loss to quite a lot of Motherwell fans abroad. Is there plans to reintroduce things like this should the society come to fruition and you get your feet under the table, as you were talking about?
We would like to, Alan, and I'm not quite sure the best way to do it. And we talked about this before, about a year ago, how best to keep... It's back to the communication thing. We really need to be better, much better at... making sure that the international guys have access to what's going on. And clearly the television thing, the video thing was a good way of doing that and getting people to actually see what was happening on the field as well. With all of these things that we're talking about, how best to communicate, how best to persuade people to turn up to the games, all of these things I think need ideas. The board has some ideas, but we would like, as part of this communication, it's a two-way thing, we would like ideas to come from the fans. And if anybody's got ideas about how to engage more the international members, we would like to hear from them. I have to say that I have telephoned a few of the members who live abroad, partly to let them know what's going on, but also partly to ask them if they would contribute to what we're trying to do fund-wise. You will recall, perhaps, that we tried a consortium idea, and we got pledges, probably more than £300,000, but it wasn't enough to take us where we needed to go, hence the loan from Les. There's a couple of people that I've been talking to who have indicated that they might be interested in supporting us in different ways. So we do canvass any high wealth prospects if we can. If we find out who they are, we're onto them right away. And also we plan, as part of this video idea, to go international and appeal to any Motherwell supporter or anybody who has a Motherwell connection or who knows anybody who lives and works in Motherwell or surrounding areas in Carluke and Wishaw, anywhere that has a link with Motherwell. We're going to appeal to them to help us, because even though we're getting, the club is getting a loan from Les, the club and the society have to pay it back over a five-year period. So we continue to recruit. We continue to look for donations, pledges, and raising funds in all sorts of ways.
Brian, another interesting question that we got was via Jonathan Warnock. He mentioned that Fir Park is decaying and continues to cost the club a fortune to fix. Does the society see a sustainable future at our current home?
I'm not sure that it's decaying, and I'm not sure it's costing a fortune at the moment to maintain. I would need to see the financial details of that, but I don't see anywhere else in the horizon. I think the club some time ago looked to the Ravenscraig site to see if could there be a new build there, but for whatever reason that fell through. So in the meantime, we continue to maintain it as it is, and maybe if we get more funds, we can improve the appearance of the stadium. I certainly have experience of watching the football in the east stand and also in the main stand, and yeah, there's room for improvement, no doubt. How much we need to do that, I'm not sure. But certainly that would be something that we would have to look at, and certainly look to improve where we are. Maybe sometime in the future, who knows? But at the moment, there are no plans to look elsewhere.
I don't think any of us can really disagree. It seems like the main stand is a bit of, it looks like a bit of a hazard, but I suppose it has served us all these years. Home is where the heart is and all that. I certainly wouldn't want to leave Fir Park in a hurry, but it just seems like the time may be approaching sometimes. We'll move on to the next one. Jay, your dad actually contributed a question via yourself, so I'll allow you to ask on his behalf.
Yeah, no worries. Jim Henderson got in touch by email to say it's one of these sort of in-depth ones. Again, the actual question itself is quite simple, but there's a little bit of background, so bear with me. The reason I feel the society has stumbled along since its initial launch is because the goalposts have been continually moved, and now neither those who did join initially nor new potential members are sure what the setup is or will be. Initially, it was stated that the club was looking for a financial cushion of up to £1.5 million to alleviate any cash flow problems. It was stated that £250,000 would be seen as success, but the higher figure would be the target. The money would always be an asset of the society, either in its own bank account or on loan to Motherwell FC. Then early this year, the directors gave a deadline of the end of November to reach a total of £800,000, and then we were told that this figure wasn't enough, although never given the new figure. In the early literature and at meetings, it was stressed that John Boyle had gifted his shares to the club with the intention of fan ownership. Derek Weir stated that 45% of the shares would be transferred to the society once the first target of £250,000 was reached, with the balance to be transferred once the society had proved it passed the SFA's fit and proper person test for running a football club. Now it appears that the society has to purchase these shares rather than them being passed over. Will the current members and potential new members be told why things changed, and will the society be relaunched once the financial details of Les Hutchison are ironed out?
That's a very big, long question. Let me just explain what I know about all of that. The first thing is, John Boyle has gifted his shares to the club, and the shares are held in trust by the trustees, that's Derek Weir, Jim McMahon, Andrew Wilson, it used to be Leanne Dempster. Yes, there was a suggestion that if we raised a certain amount, that a certain percentage of the shares would be transferred across. But for a particular reason, to do with the liability, if things went bad, it was suggested by the club that we should wait until we were able to acquire the full amount of the shares rather than small amounts. The loan is to the club. The club has agreed to pay back the loan over a five-year period, certain amounts at certain periods. And because of the financial situation that the club is in, it is not able to pay back the loan in equal amounts, so the society has been asked to contribute to that. So we will pay a certain amount in the first year, and a certain amount in the following year. And where the club is able to pay back the loan in the intervals that have been set in the agreement, if it can't pay the full amount, the society has agreed to pay any difference. So I'm trying to remember all the different bits of this question, but I hope that kind of explains that bit. Tell me again.
I suppose essentially the actual underlying question was more whether information would be provided to why the goalposts, you know, at least from the outside looking in, were perceived to change every so often. And also, will the society be, you know, properly relaunched once this deal's concluded?
Yeah, that's a good thing we are planning to do. Clearly, we are marketing an idea. And while we can try and persuade people to join on the basis of the benefits, which is the model that we were given. So, again, as I said before, if anybody's got any ideas how to rebrand the society and the club, then we'd be very glad to hear what they have to say. We plan to have a meeting next week, and that's our first item on the agenda. What can we say to folk to make it very clear that we as a society are aiming to achieve certain things, and what would it look like once we do that? So we appeal to everybody to help us in that, and that's why the communication side has to improve a hell of a lot.
Can I just sort of cut in here as well? We are at a point where we probably need to try and encourage people to join up here. I'm not a member myself as of yet. Obviously, with what's been going on in the last couple of weeks, it's been pretty much encouraging to me, and I'm more than willing to, you know, start looking at it now, maybe after Christmas. I 100% agree, though, as you says, Brian. It's basically about, you know, putting as much money towards the club as they can. Obviously, if you have to pay for these sort of benefits and things, I don't really see the benefits as, you know, that great anyway. So if the main benefit basically is the club's survival, I've said that before and I've said that again, you know, if the club is still about, you know, that's the one thing that everybody would want rather than just you know, a DVD or something like, you know.
Absolutely, I agree with that. And if people want a DVD, that's not a problem. But the most important thing is to make sure the club survives. And I just repeat, it's most important that it survives and it has enough to be sustainable over the peace. And that's why we're doing it. So, I mean, please let me know if there are any benefits that you would want to put into the pot, and if it doesn't cost the society or the club a lot, then all the better. But we might want to make sure that the guys who put in, you know, £5,000, for example, I think probably they would want to be rewarded for that. They still only have one vote. But, you know, the guys who are paying in 5,000 plus, you know, a whack every year to renew, then...
No, understandable.
Yeah, you know, that's fair enough, and no problem with that. And if that means being invited to the boardroom, which is really no big deal to some of them who've already got experience of going to the boardroom, but if that's what they want, and then that's great. I invite these guys every so often to the boardroom and have a good conversation, and they enjoy that. And I would like to open that up to the fans, because I know a lot of guys who attend the games in the East Stand where I used to have my season ticket. They give me a wave every Saturday that I'm at the home game. I would like to invite them and all the guys round about and anybody else who can't invite everybody, but perhaps, as I said earlier, if raffle or you just have a a dip into a hat every home game and see who comes out and then invite them. Things like that, I think that would be good.
Just finally, Brian, and again, I'd like to reiterate, thanks very much for your time. We'll need to get you on at a later date to perhaps ask the questions that we didn't manage to ask tonight.
Sure.
And maybe in a more abbreviated version, because we went on a lot longer than planned. I know you were involved in the selection process for the new manager, or at least were in certain interviews for the new manager. Ian Barraclough eventually appointed. I believe his interview was extremely impressive.
Yep. Well, I have to say that all the interviews were impressive. All the candidates were very, very good. You know, any one of them could have been the new manager, but Ian came over extremely well. He's very personable, and he's got experience that I think we need as a club. He accepts that there is a financial constraint. And the other thing is that he's worked with a club that didn't have an enormous budget, but given the scarce resources, achieved a hell of a lot. And one of the things I asked him about was the plan ownership, and he gave me an extremely impressive response, and he's all for what we're trying to do. And already I noticed that he's out there talking to the fans, and he wants to be involved in any possible way he can, and hopefully be able to persuade the players as well, that we are all in this together as a group, as a team, from the captain to the manager to the chairman to the office staff, everybody. Working together, and he came over as somebody who bought into that idea. So we're very pleased that he was appointed, and look forward to his role in promoting the young guys in the academy. And we hope to see two or three local guys coming through, making their appearance in the first team. And you know, that's good for the fans to see one of their own actually playing. I mean, you imagine two or three Jamie McFadden's coming through, that would be absolutely brilliant. And I think the other thing I would like to say about Les, I mean, I've spoken to Les several times, and I met him a few times since May when we got the ultimatum. He actually wrote and sent an email to say that he would be willing to give us a substantial gift. Because of that, I contacted him in New York, and we met in his holiday home in Bothwell. We had a chat, and he came up with a lot of ideas about how we could proceed. He's the one who came up with the idea of the loan. And he's a top guy, very approachable. He's very direct in what he says, and he's got Motherwell at heart. And I think the combination of Les, the new manager, and a different approach how we run the club augurs well for the future.
Well, as I say, I think that's all we've got time for tonight. Brian, thank you very much for your time. It's been much appreciated.
Pleasure.
Brian, thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks.
Cheers.
Jay Buster, we'll be back following the St Mirren game on Saturday, hopefully in positive spirits, a relegation crunch match. Until then, thanks and good night.
Good night. Cheers.
Fun with no cause, quick dash with quick cash, don't pause. Round here, find a little feel an effect, because that money seemed to make a man feel some respect. So tell me who's spreading the butter, because I'm trying to make a bed but I'm stuck in the gutter. But they say it's just a matter of time, every Friday morning about a 8:45 when I'm standing in line, biding my time for that one job that they're claiming is mine. And if it don't come, then I'll say that it's fine, knowing that it's straight back, they're just right in the rain. No change in my pocket, not a penny a dame, just a fucked up economy declining with time. It's complicated, up to my knees in it, and I pray please kill it, but it won't go.